Hey, this is Will the Mad Menaker, Chapo Morning Zoo crew. We are broadcasting live, counting down all your 80s, 90s, and 70s rock classics. We're broadcasting live from the migrant caravan, making its way up to the U.S. border. We've just crossed into Mexico from Guatemala. And we're all here. We're partying. We're rocking and rolling. We're swishing and dishing. We've got our Soros-sponsored go bags. They're full of drugs, guns, and lawyers. We're ready to bring this rock and roll invasion to your doorstep. ISIS is here. They're loving it. We're listening to rock. We're listening to Foghat. We're looking for jobs? No. We're looking for blood before the midterm elections. We're registering to vote along the way. We're registering all the migrant voters coming soon to a neighborhood near you. Call now to get tickets to see Jethro Tull at the Motor Speedway. Our fourth caller becomes a U.S. citizen who can vote 10 times. A little bit later in the show, the hour top of the hour, we'll be talking to George Soros, who's bankrolling this entire invasion. It's Camp of the Saints all day on the Chapo Morning Zoo crew, rock and roll, bringing the caravan to you.
Pepsi Max is the only sugar-free cola alternative that contains authentic baby parts.
We are here at Senior Frogs for the next 42 hours. 2-for-1 cocktails for anyone who promises to behead a senior citizen once they get to the United States.
Hezbollah-style terrorists are here with Al-Qaeda, with ISIS, with the drug cartels. There are no women and children in this caravan again.
It's just swole dudes. They're doing reps. They're fucking taking steroids.
We have the most powerful Muslims, the Shia division. They're doing pull-ups in covered wagons.
There are no women and children. It's boys only. It's a nonstop caravan of a man cave.
Dudes rock.
More like a caravan. It's just for fellows.
We will be coming soon before the midterm elections. You cannot stop us, Chapo Morning Zoo crew. Coming up next, it's Led Zeppelin with the Immigrant Song 10 times in a row. row.
Okay, that was pretty good.
I have another cousin song. 10 years ago, on a cold, dark night, my cousin and I actually saved Vin Diesel's life. There are a few at the scene, but they all could agree. I killed a pro fighter, my cousin and me.
That long black veil?
Yeah.
That is a
yeah.
deep cut.
Yeah.
I haven't listened to that song in too long, but I'm sure you could imply that the woman in the long black veil is Kate Upton.
Yeah.
Yo,
she couldn't tell anyone because her husband's Justin Verlander. Yo, I like fucking died. Yo, the judge was like, dude, tell me who you were fucking. And I was like, no. He fucking killed me, dude. I'm fucking dead. But actually, my dad won this contest when I was a kid that said if I died, I could sing a song. Could sing a song about why I died.
Anyway, guys, it's Chapo. We're back to our regularly scheduled programming.
Yes.
We're back here in Brooklyn. The tour's over. We're glad to be back. And I guess as I alluded to at the top of the show, I guess the hottest story right now is the migrant caravan that's coming to your town soon.
Yep.
This is the story that is basically being covered on Fox News 24/7. I, again, cannot believe it's real, that this is a real thing that people are concerned about.
Well, they're all ISIS. Why wouldn't you be concerned?
They're saying, yeah, there's ISIS, and it's just like the perfect made-up story to juice sickos, meemaws, and pep-peps right before the midterm election.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not. It's a real thing.
Oh, I mean, it's a real thing.
Horribly deprived people who are from countries that have been systematically exploited and destroyed largely by the United States.
I'm sorry. I'm not up on my Fox News talking points. Do they think that they're like Muslimic style?
Yep.
They said aren't they all like Honduran?
Well, I mean, no, Amber, could you tell a difference?
Well, they're using the porous border to get in is the idea.
Yeah.
Today, Trump honestly topped himself. He just said, there's a lot of bad guys in there. There's Middle Easterners.
He said there's MS-13.
No, and then Middle Easterners. So, not even fucking with like ISIS, not terrorists, not even like forgetting that you're supposed to be like, I'm only against the bad ones.
Yeah.
Just literally people from a part of the world are coming. Maybe.
Probably. Well, here's the thing. It's supposedly 5,000 strong and like they've just made their way into Mexico. Again, the vast majority of them will probably seek asylum in Mexico. And Mexico is a huge fucking country. And then, like, I would be shocked if, like, maybe 200 or 300 made it to the U.S. border and got into the United States. And again, who the fuck cares? I honestly will send them the party bus and drive
all
them.
All right, well, you say that when they fucking suicide bomb your favorite Applebee's, buddy. Then you're not going to be so happy about it.
Not my favorite.
Yeah, exactly.
So fucking stupid.
Well,
no, it's the caravan. They're coming.
They're coming for you.
They're coming.
They're literally coming for you. They're going to show up at the villages.
Yep, they're coming straight to the villages.
In a bunch of jalopies, and then they're just going to start mowing people's lawns without permission or something. I don't know.
No, they're all going to come, and they're going to come in front of the villages, and the leader of the caravan will grab the loudspeaker and just go, just leave. Leave the precious gasoline. Just go and you won't be harmed.
Walk away from the Cheesecake Factory. Just walk away.
Just walk away.
Walk away from the cheesecake.
And then they bring out, like, on the golf carts, a couple, like, geezers tied to the front of it. And they're like, no, don't give them anything. Protect the villages.
It is really funny because it's just so it's so delusional. Like, this is the sort of thing that was on like the fringes of Free Republic back in like 2007.
This is the plot of that crackpot racist novel Camp of the Saints,
right,
that Steve Bannon and Rod Dreher like so much.
Right.
This is their fantasy come true.
Right. But it is, I mean, it does betray a horrifying psychosis, which is, you know, the country is just trending towards like complete isolation of the people who care about, who are really think this is a real story, a real horrifying story, and everyone else where their lives are probably safer than anyone's at like any point in human history.
And U.S. history alone.
Right. And because their politics don't really reflect their lives in this aspect, they're going to have to keep creating more and more fantastical phantoms that are animated by their racism that just, you know, just will eventually result in border guards just fucking mowing people like this down.
Oh yeah.
100%. Yeah, no, Trump's already talking about sending the army, not the reserves, the army to the border. And yeah, the trend there is only going to be towards horrible bloodshed, which these people would be absolutely happy with.
And he literally said this upcoming election is the caravan election. He said it's the Kavanaugh and the caravan election.
I love how he just talks it out. You know, like all this stuff that's supposed to happen behind the scenes, where it's all the messaging is determined by Frank Luntz, you know, toadstools, and then you give them talking points, and then they have the talking points. Trump just says, folks, the thing is the caravan. It's big. You're scared of it. You're going to vote for me. And he just says it. He doesn't even have to leave that, like, to subtext. He just says it. And now his other closer is him saying, we're going to give the middle class a 10% tax cut right before the election.
Right, sure. Congress has gone home.
They can't do it.
They can't.
No one knows what he's talking about. He just made it up. He's like, people like tax cuts. I'll say we're going to get one. And there.
He's
scared of terrorists.
Like,
I'm saying they're coming for you.
I mean, literally.
Like riding mower dads who believe in caravans.
Yeah. I mean, but that's literally it. Like, his voters, you don't have to. Fuck it. You can't be like, actually, the Ways and Means Committee isn't even in session. It's just like they're going to click on a Bonsai Buddy link that says, like, you win $300. They'll be like, that's Trump's tax cut. Thank you so much, sir. And like,
congratulations.
Yeah. And they just don't have to see anything. It doesn't matter. Like, none of the gotchas work. Like, you know, Brett Kavanaugh, it is the Brett Kavanaugh election for them. And Brett Kavanaugh is the biggest swamp creature in Trump's Republican primary parlance that we've ever seen. He was basically Bush's personal secretary. He's this creature of the DC big law world. And it just, you know, they've just turned this crying prep school pussy into like a cool MAGA guy.
If he set foot outside the beltway, he'd start gasping for air like a fish you pull out of the fucking boat. I mean, he's just the least like regular American you could imagine, but he'd be gasping for a drink like a fish pulled out of a boat. He's a good old trucking. He's a F-150 Kavanaugh, just a simple man who loves beer like we all do.
Anyway, so yeah, expect to hear just nothing, just nonstop. Just expect to hear about the caravan from all of your Facebook relatives and friends who you haven't talked to since high school.
Yeah,
it's gonna be the most pressing issue. Oh, Trump also recently said that middle class mower dads. He said there was a riot in California against the sanctuary cities.
Yes.
He said that there was a riot in California.
They're rioting to get away from the sanctuary cities.
Just 1,000% whole. Amazing. It wasn't even like based on something where like a rider dad, like a mower dad fell off his like lawnmower and was like, ow, the caravan did it.
And he said also that Democrats, they're going to give illegals cars.
Luxury cars. Luxury automobiles.
And it's amazing because he did two straight rallies. The first rally said they want to give him licenses. What's next? They want to give him cars? And then he was so impressed with his rhetoric that the next day he just said, folks, they're going to give him cars.
Yeah.
And he just cut out the hypothetical and said that they're actually going to do it.
That's a very specific kind of word salad madness, though, where you say something that you know is not true, and then 5 seconds later, not only do you believe it, you expound upon it. Like Red Kahina would do that a lot.
Yeah, no, he's convinced himself of all this stuff.
If you were an illegal immigrant, what can I do to put you in this Audi? No money down. No citizenship required. No money at all required.
I mean, I believe that like members of the caravan deserve the same opportunity as any American Audi driver, which is to get Wendy's at 11 p.m., listen to The National, and think about your life.
A free Bentley.
That's what you do if you drive an Audi.
A free Bentley for any illegal who shows up wearing an I voted sticker.
Show your receipts from voting over 10 times and you get a brand new Lexus.
Yeah.
I would do that. The other Trump adjacent story that I want to touch on briefly is this Jamal Khashoggi thing. This story continues to evolve.
Oh,
and I mean, again, I don't want to say hilarious because what happened to him is bone chilling. Bone song.
Yeah, I really walked right into that one. Yeah.
No, I mean,
so did he.
Oh my God.
You can cut that if you want.
No, it's good. Leave that in there.
No, leave it. Yeah. It's terrible, but we laugh about death here.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, yeah, if you get mad at us for this, how many fucking 9/11 jokes have you posted?
Yeah, exactly.
Eat shit.
So here's the thing. Like, I mean, again, shouldn't be surprised at all, but just the way that which official DC is going to go to bat for Saudi Arabia over this. I've seen, first of all, the Saudi internet squadron is like the tightest shit on Twitter.
It's
like,
so powerful.
They're so amazing. I saw this one guy who was just like, look, he's like, MBS is a young guy. You can't expect him to deal with something like this with the finesse and grace of a practiced Western political leader.
Yeah, MBS is Matt Saracen, literally, kind of, from Friday Night Lights. He wasn't meant to be here, but it's just like he's showing up. He's doing his best. Coach, which is King Solomon, is yelling at him, but he's like, he's showing up big.
Yeah.
No, he's got a big heart.
I mean, like, obviously, like, all the reports I'm reading is that Saudi Arabia, and rightly so, genuinely surprised and caught off guard that people are so mad about this.
Cool, we just blew up a school bus full of children. Yeah. You remember that? Nobody gave a shit. Were you sawing up one fucking op-ed writer and you guys care? What the hell?
Yeah.
And they really
underestimated how much the press thinks they're the troops.
Oh, absolutely.
Country.
That's the thing they didn't realize. If this guy hadn't been a reporter, really, if he'd just been some freelance dissident or something, this, I don't think, would have been nearly the story it is. It's because he's part of the group. He's part of the in circle of American elite, and you can't chop them up.
And here's the thing.
You can blow
up
all the school hot buses you want, but you can't chop up those people.
A lot of their like K Street lobbying people have backed away from them. They've headed for the exits. But that's like the highest tier. And then you're seeing the results of that when they have to do their own PR, and it's just like the reply guy brigade who's just like, look, just he like, showed up. Saudi is country of justice. In America, this murder would be covered up. Google Seth Rich and Benghazi.
Yeah. Oh, so those are literally the guys from the Orb place.
Yeah.
Like that, they made basically an internet cafe for guys to work in and reply to you and be like, first of all, this is an internal affair. Second of all, how come no criticism when Barack Obama persecuted Dennis Hastert? Is not the same thing?
Look,
if you had to work at either the Saudi troll farm or Correct the Record, which one would be worse? Think of all that Lululemon. Think of all those Hillary girls just guzzling down Frappuccinos. Just which one would be worse?
Well, at the end of the day, I'm not like legally blocked by the rules of my country from watching like This Is Us on NBC because it's too titillating.
No, I'm saying which one would you rather work at?
If it's whole cloth, like I'm in that situation, I'm going to go Correct the Record. But if it's like I'm just working there, I get to stay here. I'm probably going to the Saudi one because you can have more. They're not monitoring you as close. Like I feel like the Hillary one, you're hyper micromanaged and they're like
totally micromanaged. Right. You can't get creative.
Fucking improv. They're like, actually, he showed up at the consulate in 13 pieces in a wheelbarrow.
They're just making up as they go along. It's like an easy, fun job. It exercises you creatively.
So we got to talk about like again, now that they're divorced of their slicker DC PR shops and they have to cover their own asses, you're seeing some truly hilarious thing. And I want to talk in particular about they've had like weeks now to come up with an excuse for what happened. And the one they came up with.
And this was highly hyped.
Yeah.
Because the Saudi said, we're doing an investigation. And Trump and those said, look, we can't condemn them until we hear them out.
Trump literally said, almost literally said Saudi Arabia is being Kavanaugh'd.
Yeah.
Like, you know, look, where's the evidence? Yeah. We can't just assume they're guilty just because into their consulate and then never walked out.
Let's see what they have to say.
So what they had to say after they came up with this investigation is that he walked into the consulate to get his marriage certificate and then started a fight with them. And then after which 18 guys proceeded to kill and then chop him up. I don't think they've admitted to the chopping him up part.
They have not.
They just said
the chopping. They say they don't know where the body is.
Yeah, they said
they don't know where the body is.
People who have some trashy weddings. I don't think that happened. I'm going to go out on a limb and say this like quiet potato man journalism did not just like have too many Mike's Hard Lemonades and then call someone a slut and then headbutt his aunt. Didn't happen.
He tried to square up in the consulate, and then 18 guys killed him.
Who were there for some reason.
Yeah, for a couple of hours.
They wanted to talk to him. 18 guys flew in the day before to talk to him, and then he got rowdy, and then they killed him. And then, you might not know this, but the Saudi consulate in Istanbul has a parallel dimension room where if like things go in there and then they kind of get like lost in sort of, you know, a quantum state.
What happened to Ozzy Smith?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. That's the only way, because they literally say they don't know what happened to his body.
Couldn't they just say, like, he was a danger to national security, or he was leaking state secrets, or something more plausible?
Well, that's the craziest thing.
He started, like, throwing bows in the middle of the consulate.
Is that they've admitted that they wanted to basically abduct him back to Saudi Arabia. Like, that's the basis of it, is all these guys came here to bring him back to Saudi Arabia. And there's no explanation for why that would be acceptable either.
They're like, just
calm
down.
Yeah, they kind of don't get it.
We were trying to kidnap him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, but he's not. He didn't do it. You don't even have an accusation of a thing he did that you would kidnap him for. And you should be kidnapping people even if they are criminally liable.
Seems like it would be really easy for them to like present a plausible lie that wouldn't make Americans mad and that they just weren't even
because
trying.
Everyone wants to hear something from them.
Yeah,
because
like,
nobody wants to disturb
something.
The relationship.
Give us something.
Yeah,
when you saw on CNN
thing.
the that dumb fucking plausibility act that all of the anchors were trying to say. They're like, well, we don't know what happened. Where is the body? We don't know. And we have to sit here and listen to them act like they're that fucking stupid because they're under the impression that their job is to be as plausible or like just to believe that every possible consideration is plausible. So they're just begging for anything. They're literally like, just give us something. Because they want to like the Sauds.
So it's like, it is like a world star hypothetical. You have $1 trillion, basically, in liquid assets. You have 2 weeks to come up with a lie. no one in the world actually really wants to decouple with you. I mean, the journalists are mad that they killed, you know, one of theirs, but you literally, it is the best scenario you could have to get away with a murder, right? And the thing they come up with was, yo, actually, he doesn't look like it, but he was fucking all of us up. Yeah. He was beating all of our asses, and we had to end him with sick blade attacks. And then he evaporated.
Yeah.
And I mean, the thing is, I don't know how much this will matter, because I saw someone say, I've never seen the Saudi lobby on its back foot like this. And it's true. It hasn't been on its back foot, you know, with much more egregious things, with, like, say, striking the stuff from the 9/11 report about Prince Bandar giving money to, you know, a few of the hijackers. But
yeah, they got really greedy. Like, it's a very, a D turns into a B so easily situation.
Well, it does sort of show the morphing of the kingdom, right? Because they said, okay, you could say they were trying to rendition him. Well, that's something Gulf states do all the time. Not just with dissidents, just with, like, say a kid escapes the guardianship of their parents because they're gay or they're an atheist or something. There have been numerous cases of people like 17-year-olds, even legal adults, going to, like, Malaysia and getting renditioned from the embassy back to their home country, back to their family's home. And I have trouble believing that with all the mercenaries in the world, they couldn't do that. But, you know, maybe they couldn't. Saudi Arabia under Mohammed bin Salman is about as evil as it's always been, but just 100% more reckless and incompetent. And Khashoggi himself, he was a holdover from pre-MBS Saudi Arabia. He was not, and this is not, you know, this backdoor federalist.com way of saying he deserved to die, but he was not a dissident for most of his life. He was someone who sort of justified a lot of Saudi soft power and covert regional aims in the region with his writing, because he was allied with the faction of the family that lost against Mohammed bin Salman. He did, of course, come out against a lot of Saudi practices later. He came out a lot of things that were authentically MBS. But I think, yeah, he was never like, he wasn't exactly one of the people who gets crucified for blogging in Riyadh. He ended up dead, just like they did, but he was a relic of the more covert, the more secretive kingdom that wouldn't try to get op-ed or publicity photos with The Rock to prove that they're a different country now.
That is funny. Speaking of The Rock, they just had the WWE Crown Jewels in Saudi Arabia. That's been a big thing for MBS is bringing wrestling to Saudi Arabia. That 18-on-1 death match was a real highlight. But no, what it is it's like, what happens when you have a country that's ruled by 5,000 Don Juniors, you know? I mean, we have these idiot fail rich kids, but, like, they generally don't have responsibilities. They contract that out to people who actually know what they're doing. Here, they have all of these inbred fucking dipshit relatives, you know, princes, and they're all with actual jobs, including, like, you know, dismembering guys and burning documents and all that. And they do a terrible job of it, as you would expect a bunch of dumb inbred rich assholes to do. They do things like send 18 guys to kill one dude and then forget that his wife is waiting for him outside, so that when they send a guy out in his fucking clothes, it doesn't work. They did that. They said they killed him, took his clothes off, put him on another guy, and had that guy walk out to prove that he left the building alive. And then there's drone footage the Turks got of them just burning documents in a giant oil drum in the back of the embassy. It's like Pain and Gain was a country.
I saw somebody post that I've never seen the Saudi, you know, PR machine on its back foot like this, and it is true, but it sort of reminds me. Do you remember when everyone made fun of Ed Wheeling?
Oh yeah,
the guy.
Yeah, fucking Susan Collins essentially endorsed the Ed Wheeling
theory right,
when she voted for him.
Yeah. Right. I mean, the old axiom of Twitter isn't real life is less true in many parts of people's lives than it ever has been, but it still holds in things like this.
just because you see everyone rightfully making fun of these guys, rightfully making fun of like Ali Shabib and all these fucking dumbasses who are just like, yo, honestly, that was the first day Mohammed bin Salman was crown prince, so give him a break. And it's like, yeah, we're rightfully making fun of them, and they look desperate and they look stupid, but it ultimately, and I think people should have picked this up from Kavanaugh, it kind of doesn't matter when so much is on the line for the other party. What is the cost to them if they maintain weapon sales, they maintain the special relationships with Saudi Arabia? Now, this might change things down the line. This might be, at this point in time, like a huge watershed moment for, you know, if another faction of another party gets it, it may change public consciousness on this. But for now, for the foreseeable future, no, it's business as usual.
Yeah. And to that point, I want to read something from, I mean, again, like, as we said, even with all the full page ads demanding answers and all the outrage over this, nobody in official Washington, D.C. really wants this to be true. And they certainly don't want to make trouble between them and Saudi Arabia, because guess who pays a lot of their fucking bills? And I'm not talking about K Street. I'm talking about, let's say, an organization like the Federalist, perhaps. I mean, we don't know who funds them, but an interesting question that might be answered by their reaction to this. Who's a major contributor to virtually every think tank in DC, both conservative and liberal? Who pays for people to have social media jobs in DC? I don't know. It's an interesting question. But here's just one example. This is from Martin Indyk. I'm just going to read his bio. Distinguished fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, former U.S. Special Envoy for Israel-Palestine Negotiations, U.S. Ambassador to Israel, Assistant Secretary of State for NEA. Martin Indyk. This is Obama's guy.
Right. Martin Indyk is like, he is sort of the Forrest Gump of just standing around doing, accomplishing zero, nothing. That resume you just read, that's like, you know, pyrotechnics manager for Great White.
Now, this is what he says about this, and this is like as official Washington as you can get. Like I said, former ambassador to Israel, Council on Foreign Relations. He says here, Ian Bremmer is right. Nothing justifies the outrageous murder of Jamal Khashoggi, but Saudi Arabia does have strategic value to the U.S. as the swing oil producer in a tightening oil market and the only regional Arab power left standing that's willing to counter Iran.
Yeah.
And there you go. There you go, what this is all really about.
Yep.
And what these people will all say is, look, we know Saudi Arabia is evil. We know they do bad, evil things. But the fact of the matter is, all countries do bad, evil things. And the most evil, baddest of them all is Iran. Yep. And that's what really counts here. And, you know, my question about this is, given how they're both evil, oil-rich countries in a tightening market, how about we just ally with Iran against Saudi Arabia?
Oh, you silly.
I mean, if we're just being real politic here.
You silly boy. You can't do that.
They killed our fucking friend.
Yeah.
Don't look when the other people killed our other friends. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. No. It's just not going to happen.
That's what this
Israel,
is about.
Israel, that's, not going to let that happen.
It's as unlikely as the most unlikely thing, which is we get out of everywhere and we stop making 24-year-olds who get flustered at the counter at Cozy deal with these hundreds of years of resentments and complex issues. But can we look at the one bright side? This awful tale?
Yes.
Erdoğan's victory. Erdoğan is what our great Turkish friend calls Erdoğan. I don't know if it really... It may be a pun in a proper Turkish pronunciation.
No, I think he's just kind of an asshole. Like, that's just how he insults people.
I've also heard Erdoğan, but we're not going to use that racially charged word. Erdoğan, the greatest fake friend in the world.
Absolutely.
Erdoğan.
You know they were pissed when they start, we have all of this on tape and we're just going to tell everybody.
Erdoğan fucking... He the most bugged embassy in the world. Like everything, it's like a haunted house where it's like, oh, put your finger in the intestines. It's really spaghetti. It's just like every picture, cameras and shit. And I love how the Turks are they're releasing one thing a day to keep this at the top of the news for 2 weeks straight. Because as much of a fucking petty, stupid asshole as Erdoğan is, he understands that like Western journalists take this as an attack, and he's like, "Here's some more."
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Saudi's like, "Oh, he gets PR."
He's a clever little bitch.
Saudi's quick note, what the hell, dude? We created ISIS together. What are you doing?
Yeah, and also quick note on Erdogan so no one gets mad at us. When it comes to disappearing and murdering dissidents and journalists, Turkey is nearly the best at that. So
you got to figure that this is just like it's his way of going like, oh, see, it's amateur hour.
Yeah, exactly.
they straight up murdered three Kurdish activists in Paris. Just shot him in their office. So didn't even need a bone saw.
When it comes to killing journalists, Erdogan is looking at Saudi Arabia like alcoholics look at St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. But I'd say that like the way to think about this is the same way to think about pretty much everything that's happened since Trump is that it's just we're in the era of fuck it, max off. We're in the era when all of the niceties that used to like gild the lily and sort of, you know, provide a rhetorical and ideological and imaginative distortion for what's really happening in the world, they're just kind of all falling away. And we're talking about a thing like this in explicit terms of, look, yeah, they chopped the guy up. Okay, but oil, but arms Iran, sales. But arms. Like, we're just... All of the bullshit, it was always bullshit, but we always felt the need to coat things bullshit. And now that it's just, I think because people realize no one's actually paying attention, things move too fast, nobody's really holding on to anything, there really isn't a public square anymore, there really isn't like a public that could rally around issues, everyone's just sort of glazed and overwhelmed. So you can just sort of, you can just say what you really think. You can just be
like, I feel like,
we need,
popular anti-Iran sentiment has like, in many ways kind of dissipated because of that cycle. I mean, it's still like, you know, public enemy number one in the wonk class, but like, I don't know anyone who like, and any kind of right wingers who kind of organically fear Iran. Now it's all about the hordes and the caravans and whatnot. Yeah,
but the thing about it is that now you don't need to whip up anything. You just go to war.
Yeah.
What are people going to do about it? They're going to probably forget about it.
So moving on to this next issue that I've been dying to talk about for a while. I was going to do this when we were on tour, but I think I realized doing things on stage that actually make me mad kind of sucks for live shows. Like when I do Rod Dreher or John Podhoretz, like I find them delightful.
Oh, yeah.
I find them just wonderful, whimsical characters. I love talking about it. It fills my heart with joy.
Oh, God.
To read a Rod post.
Oh, yeah. Just like just imagining Pederitz in a propeller beanie running around the Upper West Side yelling at fucking waiters.
Dreher is kind of a Squidward character.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, yeah. He's just sitting there in his dark bunker in Louisiana. Yeah,
just getting angry at like
dancing.
Happy people all day.
Yeah.
Who lives in a bathroom under the sea.
Or, for instance, John Cass in Chicago. Right. Discovering the John Cass canon was magical to me.
It changed our lives. I mean,
reading the Father's Day column, that filled me with
amazing.
Joy.
I mean, it's like all these people, they're like, they have bad opinions. They write bad things, but they're just like, they're just wacky.
Well, they're largely just powerless, miserable
dorks.
Because
they're impotent.
And they're so unhappy that it makes it funny.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
So this is my way of introducing something that actually does legitimately piss me off. And I'm talking about Ben Sasse.
Ooh.
Senator from Nebraska, Ben Sasse. And now the other thing, I want to introduce this by way of saying, like, we talked at the beginning about the caravan. And this is the caravan and the Kavanaugh election is what Trump said. And his a big slogan, their big Republican slogan for the midterms is jobs, not mobs. And on the Venom episode, we talked about how the hot new political buzzword is tribalism.
Mm-hmm.
This is the new buzzword that people are going to use to basically confuse you and make it seem like you should feel guilty for being angry at these evil fucking assholes who are ruining the world and your life with every breath that goes in and out of their disgusting corpse-like bodies.
Yeah.
And of course, Mitch McConnell getting hassled at eating lunch, or Ted Cruz getting yelled out of a restaurant. This is the horrifying spectacle of tribalistic mob violence the entire pundit class is trying to stoke up fears about or lament in some way that like, oh, this is where we've all gone wrong.
It's an obfuscational term. It completely obfuscates like the fact that people I think are trying to grapple with something that at its clearest is class politics. And at its most muddled is at least the realization that there are clear and obvious enemies.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, we have what we were talking about. We have like this white minority rule, this like fucking like latter era South African regime where like a third of the population of angry fucking, you know, suburbanites rule over the rest of us and are locking in, you know, judicial appointments and dooming us to climate oblivion right in front of our faces with every avenue of legitimate, you know, opposition closed. You can say, hey, vote. Yeah. Okay. I'll vote. The people with the most votes did not win in basically any of the elections of the last five fucking 8 years. And then you get mad at these fucking scumbags. And that somehow means that you have lost yourself to passions and tribal identity.
Yeah. You're part of a tribe, whether you know it or not.
To get to Ben Sasse, though, like if you are Ben Sasse, a guy who positions himself as not like Trump, as a decent politician that harkens back as this sort of statesman and someone who speaks to our better angels while, of course, voting to confirm Brett Kavanaugh.
Of course.
Or if you are...
He didn't even have the decency to like have that bullshit Jeff Flake, you know, like moment of uncertainty.
I'm conflicted.
He was never conflicted. He was exactly. a yes. He never even pretended he wasn't a yes.
The problem.
How did he get that reputation, though?
Sasse?
Yeah.
He wrote a book, and he criticized Trump during the run up to the election, and he
didn't
endorse him.
He did not vote for Trump in 2016.
Yeah, okay. That was like his big thing.
Yeah. So he made a big show of not voting for Trump, but he votes with Trump as a senator probably 80-90% of the time. But like this is the problem now faced by someone like Ben Sasse or David Brooks, who wrote about this topic, or Charles Lane at the Washington Post, another absolutely vicious scumbag who would now like to lecture the rest of us on being nice and civility and things like that. What do you do when the political agenda that you support has essentially won, but you're also slightly embarrassed by that, and you still want to pretend to be a good, thoughtful person? Again, the politics that you support are going to make life for most people more savage, more alienated, and more miserable. So what you do is you tell them that politics and an interest in politics or a concern for what is happening in the world or in the news is what's making them sick. Their side has won. They now can, Ben Sasse, he has won. They can now control all three branches of the government, and as we said, are filling the courts with all of the vampires that they want that will have a fucking stranglehold on our law and government for probably as long as we are alive. So how are you going to deal with the fact that even though you control most of the government, you're brutally unpopular? There's no popular support for any of these outside of like the rump 20-30% of this, you know, MAGA shitheads in these countries. You're brutally unpopular and everybody hates you, rightly so, for what you're doing to them with every day of your life and the power that you wield. So you tell them that the justified anger that they're feeling is making the making you sick. Mm-hmm. And the subtext to all of this is surrender.
Yeah.
It's just give up. And the apotheosis of this is an op-ed.
Roll the window down.
It's an op-ed that Ben Sasse wrote in the Wall Street Journal that is based on a new book that he has coming out. The title is "Politics Can't Solve Our Political Problems."
Whoa. That's some ideology. That's some fish scale ideology. It's sparkling off the mirror.
Intuitive thinking that intrigues me and makes me want to read more.
The subtext to all of this is surrender. It's give up with engaging with politics as a means to assert any kind of democratic will or popular sovereignty, or even just express the anger that you feel about what's being done to you.
The bomb's lost.
Yeah.
Condolences.
The subtitle is, "Our tribalism has a deeper source than the disintegration of communities and an epidemic of loneliness. The only real answers start at home." Mm. So again, pay very close attention to what he's doing. And again, this message will be repeated to you at the sort of elite highest levels of discourse.
Right.
That your loneliness and your misery and your alienation, you're doing it to yourself by being angry at politics and caring about what's going on in this country and the world. So this is Ben Sasse writing in the Wall Street Journal. "The Supreme Court confirmation process for Brett Kavanaugh didn't fully break the nation, but it did prompt more Americans to wonder if that moment is approaching. It's been a while in coming. Over the past year, I've heard thousands of my Nebraska constituents and dozens of my colleagues in the Senate of both parties say roughly the same thing. It feels like we're at a tipping point, and X or Y might be the final make-or-break battle. More Republicans and Democrats are placing politics at the center of their lives. Both sides seem to believe that a grand solution to our political dysfunction can be found inside politics. If we could only vanquish those evil people waving a different banner, this thinking goes, we'd be on the road to national recovery. To which I say, Ben, if we could vanquish you totally and completely, it would be a start on getting to a place of decency or recovery for any person living alive in this country or the world right now.
No, remember, we must not vanquish our enemies. We can't vanquish them. We mustn't use our tongues upon the social media.
Thank you, John Kasich. Yes.
A world without Ben Sass. Cut to the fucking when yeah. Lionel Hutz is imagining a world without lawyers.
So he goes on, but nothing that happens in Washington is going to fix what's wrong with America.
Hmm.
So again, he's saying nothing I'm doing in Washington or the right. party that I represent and the laws that we're passing and the things we're doing, that's not gonna help. It's not gonna hurt. It doesn't really matter. Stop paying attention. Like I said, just go to sleep. Just think of yourself. Think of how lonely you feel and how you individually yeah. can change that.
Focus on like your own little atomized space and know that it has no source whatsoever. It's completely idiopathic.
It's not that our battles over the Supreme Court, over... It's not that our battles over the Supreme Court, over dignity for accuser and accused alike, over issues like taxes and regulation and immigration don't matter. They matter a lot. The problem is that our ever more ferocious political tribalism and mutual hatred don't originate in politics, so politics isn't going to heal them. Humans are social, relational beings. We want and need to be in tribes. In our time, however, all of the traditional tribes that have sustained humans for millennia are simultaneously in collapse. What the fuck is he talking about? America is not filled with like the Picts of like the Celtic of Northern Scotland or the Visigoths and Vandals or that like none of these things that he's talking about that like what he's families or like the nuclear family model that has not existed for millennia.
Yeah.
These okay. are all, yeah.
Okay, but what about manthropology, and it's for guys only?
well, this is like everyone in politics, everyone has to live a life of fantasy now, right?
Yeah.
Because if you just post a lot now, you're the resistance. You're a scrappy group of rebels duct taping AK-47 banana clips, one upside down, so you can quickly reload in the heat of battle by replying to President Trump. If you're a MAGA shithead, you think that there is a human train of millions of Islamic-style Mexicans coming to kill you and turn Ruby Tuesdays into Ruby Ridge. if you're this fucking asshole, which is someone who believes the exact same things as Trump, but is really just upset at how rude he is, and it really just breaks my heart to rubber stamp everything he does. You believe that the epidemic of interruptions and yelling means that you are in the midst of a civil war.
Yeah. And again, this idea that that these traditional tribes have sustained humans for millennia bears no reference to the, like I said, he's going to begin talking about some imagined American past. Everything that he imagines are only the products of like post-industrial modern culture entirely. Yeah. This has not been around for millennia. What he's talking about.
Well, America is not, I mean, yeah. America is a freak.
Right, but also those tribes didn't form, you know, by some kind of, you know, filial kinship or anything. Like, these were social and economic arrangements. They all, whatever, made, you know, smelted metal or did the what the fuck ever else. Like, this stuff even was economic and political then.
Yeah, social and economic arrangements that, guess what, are the result of politics.
Yeah.
Of politics. So he says things like family, enduring friendship, meaningful shared work, local communities of worship have all grown ever thinner. We are creating thicker, more vehement tribes around our political differences. I believe because there is a growing vacuum at the heart of our shared, or increasingly not so shared, everyday lives. Loneliness is everywhere in the U.S., across every sector of society. A survey of more than blah, blah, blah. And he goes on to talk about a loneliness epidemic. None of this should surprise us. Americans today have fewer shared projects than our parents and grandparents did, and we belong to fewer civic groups. Because we change jobs more often, we have fewer lasting work friendships. We delay marriage, have fewer children, and live in larger homes and more separate from those of our neighbors. We move from place to place for relationships, economic opportunity, and better weather, and we end up with economic opportunity and better weather. Again, listen to the way he talks about this, that people are just They're just choosing to delay marriage or move around for work or have to not work or don't have one job for their entire career. These are just individual people who are choosing to make these decisions that make their lives lonelier.
Humanity just suddenly became really flaky all of a sudden. Yeah. I don't know what happened.
It's like there's this one economic system that's basically forces you to only interact with other people in a transactional, individual manner and doesn't really allow for any sort of communal understanding of anything, that the only way to be is an individual economic actor, like the idea that we are all novus, like, or all, you know, homo economicus or whatever the fuck, and we just have to activate our own we could only operate according to our own personal economic betterment, and we can only make decisions based on that. I mean, there's an economic and political system that sort of insists upon that, and in fact only allows that.
This is just incredibly...
I don't know what it was.
This is like some kind of Randian, Nietzschean... This goes so far beyond there is no society. This is like the most bleak, cynical outlook of human beings I have ever heard.
This is why...
Before we get into that, I want to point out that Homo economicus is the proper Latin name for gay for pay.
But the thing is, it's just, if it was Randian or something, if it was just like, yes, then they would be like, hell yeah, we're all only good. Fuck that. Long live the new flesh. You know, the only person who matters is me, and one day I'm going to be part of a computer or something. He is simultaneously championing an economic political system that makes this happen, and then he's crying about it.
Yes, but he's
saying
but he
it's
says
bad.
That this stuff is individuated too. At the same time, that it's like it's that this is somehow some kind of active decision that people have made.
Exactly,
which implies individualistic free will, and that you're not the product of society. It's completely incoherent.
Well, this is very similar. It reminds me of a very similar writer, our friend Thomas Friedman.
Oh, he is our friend,
Thomas
our
Friedman,
special little friend.
Thomas Friedman would always write about like the loss of American manufacturing jobs, but in the context of Americans have to work harder. They have to strap up and lace up for game time. Phase the fuck up, boys. Let's work for $2 an hour. Like it was their choice.
Yeah.
Like they were just like, send my job somewhere else. I don't need it anymore.
I'm sick of this bullshit.
It is, yeah. It is, and that thing of you know. Politics is filled with people who are crying because they got exactly what they fucking wanted. And in this case, you know, that is exactly it.
I just had this column, by the way, that went up about the Durham Miners Gala. And, you know, mining was essentially obliterated by Thatcher in the 80s. I mean, it was already under a steady decline, but she really crunched down and crushed the union. But it was absolutely amazing how much these men mourned for these jobs that filled their lungs with coal, that could potentially crush them to death, that, you know, just ravaged their bodies. Really dangerous, incredibly difficult work. But what they did like about it was that it gave them like a handle into politics in a way that other jobs did not. That you had like industrial policy, and also there are some people that are just freaks and like working really hard and don't form podcasts, but like they had a handle on industrial policy, they had a handle on the welfare state, and they had a unified political body in the form of the union that formed, I don't know, the word organically is misleading, but around a workspace. They talked about, it wasn't just that they lost the jobs, it was like the union was like a de facto kind of micro welfare state. It set up like retirement homes that were centrally located so you could like age with dignity in like the city center. You could just like have, and they were just houses. All of this stuff was this is what community actually was.
When Ben Sasse mourns the loss of shared meaningful work and community and a sense of united purpose, would it surprise you to know he's not talking about strong labor unions?
Yeah.
So he goes on. None of us wants to be left out. The same isolation we felt at the edge of the cafeteria or as the last kid picked for kickball causes everyone to yearn for a group.
They love telling on themselves.
Even though political ideology is a thin basis for intimate connections, and at least our cable news tribes offer the common experience of getting to hate people together. As relational nomads, it's far easier now to be together against something than for something. It's not as fulfilling, but at least we're not totally alone. Americans have always had political disagreements with their neighbors, but in the past, political differences could disappear when Friday night ball games rolled around and the whole town turned out wearing the whole town turned out wearing the same colors and cheering for the same team. Today, our towns are hollower and we're not on the same team anymore. Okay, what I want to note about that paragraph where he says, yeah, we had political differences, but in the past, you'll notice all the work that in the past is doing there. He doesn't specify exactly at what point in the past this era took place. Because, if he had to specify, what he would really mean is when America was highly segregated and, white, essentially politics was for white people, and as such, their political disagreements were a little less severe.
But also, as a question to that, I don't think there is more conflict at a fucking high school football game than there used to be, like more, person-to-person animosity, especially because now schools are more economically segregated than they've ever been. So you probably vote the same way as every other parent in the bandstand.
Well, the thing, and beyond the racial element, the politics he's talking about, the political economic order, was the one of strong labor unions and a very compressed economic order with relatively little inequality.
Yes,
like that was the time that he's talking about, and that all changed, and these communities aren't there anymore, and everyone's dying of fucking opioid overdoses. How did that happen?
Again, these are just things that
people just chose to do these things.
These things are all things that he's talking about. They just happened, and they all happened absent politics. So he goes, though it's tempting to think that the sorry state of our public square has to do with fights over hot-button policy issues and the president's latest tweet, the problem runs deeper than that in ways that aren't always personally comfortable. A big part of the problem is the habits and attitudes of elites. By elites, I mean just about everyone reading this, the mobile educated class. And he defines elites, he references some professor at Harvard, who defines elites as someone with at least one parent who graduated from college, which puts them in the top socioeconomic third of society. In the U.S., there is a growing divide in family structure, educational achievement, and economic prospects between this top third and the bottom two-thirds. More than ever before, we are retreating into silos that separate us from people who don't share our socioeconomic background. Again, why is this all happening? Well, why is everyone just choosing to do that?
It's so weird how like jobs that people could survive and sustain a family with without a college degree don't exist anymore. It's kind of funny how that just happened.
In the U.S., the mobile and the stuck categories are growing, while the rooted are rapidly dwindling. Place is being undermined by the digital revolution, and all of us,
that's it,
wherever we fall along the social divide, are feeling the resultant hollow pain in our chest.
I knew it was Fortnite.
In lieu of politics or economics, what he's blaming for our loneliness is the internet.
In selfies. I knew it was the fucking selfies.
It's the internet. Exactly. So he goes, how do we fix this? Not by legislation.
Of course not.
Because we're talking about souls and habits, not prohibitions and mandates.
Tell you what, you can go to church and we'll do politics then.
That's true. If he thinks none of this stuff is, if this is the biggest problem we have and politics won't solve it, why is he jacking off in the
fucking
Senate?
Wash your hands of it.
What a waste of time.
Yeah.
He is basically saying his entire life is pointless. His entire life's work of politics is totally meaningless to the lives of the people he's supposed to be representing.
That's the message for the suckers. His message is, I'm going to continue to vastly accelerate income inequality and increase the power of law enforcement to surveil, harass, and imprison you for doing the things that you need to do to, ameliorate the pain and misery that you feel as a result of our political and economic system. I'm going to keep doing all of that, but if you're angry and upset about it, just stop paying attention to it and focus on your soul. Focus on your individual soul. I consider this all part of a concerted effort on the part of the very elites that he's talking about. This reminds me very much of an op-ed that was in the New York Times not too long ago by Arthur Brooks, the head of the American Enterprise Institute, that was telling his, elite liberal audience. It was a whole article about how it's okay to go on a politics cleanse. And what he was saying is, hey, coincidentally at a time right when the midterm elections are starting to heat up, he was saying, just try this. just don't read the news or talk about anything political for 2 weeks. You might like it. Maybe you'll like it so much you'll stop caring about politics altogether, and we can continue to do what we've been planning to do for the last 30 years, which is, you know, worship Moloch, you know, resurrect Vlad the Impaler, and, you know,
just
basically find a suitable male host for King Paimon.
It's okay. Just draw a hot bath and just open your veins.
Just you're feeling sleepy, very
it's
sleepy.
It's just like going to bed. It's exactly. Just like going to sleep.
So this
I think a lot of people did do that, and now there's this mass hysteria. I've been on Facebook for like 6 hours. Everyone has lost their fucking mind. So they didn't watch it for a very long time, apparently, and now things have gotten out of hand, and now they're panicking and have no idea what to
do. But then, like, the vast majority of people, I mean, it's very telling that SAS thinks that the greatest social epidemic is political polarization, when it doesn't even affect half the country who are just too beaten down to give a shit about any of this.
Okay, this is what Ben is finally going to give you his own personal example of what he's doing. I mean, not his job as a senator, which is, you know, voting to confirm Brett Kavanaugh and everything that Trump wants to do. He goes, a decade ago, my wife Melissa and I decided to put down roots by reinvesting in my hometown of Fremont, Nebraska, and despite and partly because of the fact that it is showing signs of economic decline. The town's biggest employers are a pig plant and a chicken plant, and the share of the public school students getting free or reduced-priced lunching is spiking. Of course, I'm sure as his role as senator, he's working to, you know, axe all funding for, you know, school lunches and turn their entire education system over to, I don't know, Liberty University or someone like that.
Just turn it into an app. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Wealthier people are leaving our town of 26,000. Although first-generation immigrants are adding a youthful vitality, there is serious social conflict over the pace of change. Melissa and I...
Youthful vitality? It sounds like he wants to drink their blood.
Melissa and I have worked with our children to develop an imperfect provisional strategy for engaging more meaningfully with our community.
Oh my God.
We've tried.
That's how you parent? That's how you talk about parenting? Say that phrase again.
An imperfect provisional strategy for engaging more meaningfully with our own community. We've tried through our church and other local groups to become friends with people from every race and income bracket in Fremont. We've begun doing more community service, and we've made an important symbolic commitment to buying cemetery plots here. That's like the Tom Meyer shit where his parents showed him his grave that they bought for him. We take our kids to the graveyard and show them, yes, you'll die here. Or even if you move away, your bones will molder in the ground.
Wow, I really envy all of the poor... like immigrant people who are trying to go through their day with Ben Sasse bothering them. That's
Ben Sasse
really awful.
With family in tow. Yeah.
It's like, what are you doing? Selling oranges, huh? That sounds tough.
Have you tried logging off? Then it might be less tough.
He says, it's not nearly enough. And Melissa carries most of the burden because I'm off in DC too many nights a week. But it's a start. Just as happened under rapid industrialization and urbanization, we of the digital age must find creative ways to replenish social capital. You notice he doesn't mention people's actual capital.
No.
He's like, I'm going to continue amassing that for myself and taking it away from the rest of you. Wherever there's a disruption, new forms of Republican virtue, with a lowercase r, must emerge, flowing from and reinforcing habits of mutual affection and understanding. If too many Americans feel like we're not in this together right now, it's because we're not. We are screaming at each other, and the country no longer has enough real social texture to absorb and wick away the hatred. He's thinking about his Under Armour golf shirt when he's writing this. It's wicking away the hatred.
We need a cultural ShamWow.
The only way out is to rebuild our communities and launch new ones, one person-to-person relationship and one local institution at a time.
What is this Richard Scary Busy Town idea of society that he has?
Well, I mean, he's right in the sense that, you know, people at their local level are in a community as it exists, but like the communities
point
rise
the community,
and fall
though.
By their
who's that?
Actual
point to the community.
I don't know, like the fucking people you live around, like the town. Whatever you want to fucking call it. But
do you even know your neighbors?
What I'm saying is but we live in the atomized hell. If the plant closes and people start leaving, then how do you rebuild the community if there's no place for people to actually work meaningfully?
Entrepreneurship. That's J.D. Vance's thing. He wants to teach him all the code and whatnot.
They've switched from, I don't know, from some idea of something with roots to, I don't know what the metaphor would be, but like they want to have air plants or something. There's no foundation for anything.
Right.
I think you can just pull the stuff out of your ass and mist it once a week.
No, all of these communities are falling apart for very obvious, material, tangible reasons. There's no mystery to any of this. You can, any one of these towns, you can fucking look at the economic and political decisions that led them to the point that they are. And now the fabric's broken. You know, the thing that was holding people together is gone because people need to go anywhere they can to make a living. And if they can't make a living in this shitty little town that you're going to be buried in, then how are they supposed to stay there? How are they supposed to form these
money
bonds?
Doesn't exist to this man.
Yeah, it's like that is the fundamental reality of it, is you have to be able to support yourself and your family. And in areas with no economic base, you can't do that. And it's going to take politics to return that. It's not going to, what, logging off of fucking Instagram? How is that going to change whether or not you can fucking get a job other than maybe Walmart greeter in one of these fucking towns?
Yeah, I have to say, though, it is kind of, I don't want to say encouraging, but I feel better about, I think, the response that this piece would elicit from just, like, basically anyone than maybe it would have, like, I don't know, 5 years ago or whatever during Obama. Because at this point, people would respond to this with, what the fuck are you talking about? That is a load of shit. You are a politician and you believe we don't have serious political problems in this country.
I mean, he says that, like, oh, our political disagreements are real and like these issues matter, but like caring about them too much is tearing us apart and that it's making us lonely. And he really just wants to like heal our souls. That's what he wants to do.
My soul
is great.
He
doesn't even have an answer for that. That's what's so horrifying.
My soul was always great. These people think because they're dead inside, everyone else's problem is that they're dead inside. No, most people are kind of alive inside. They just need some fucking money and security.
But he's admitting that he doesn't have an answer to this at the end. It's just like a thing here for you guys to do.
Well, he says they volunteer at hayrides or what the fuck else.
Do some soul building. Get on that. Like, he has no actual answer for the real question.
It's Boy Scoutism.
So this is why I genuinely loathe Ben Sasse more than almost anyone in U.S. politics. It's like him and Ted Cruz are like neck and neck. But I think I may find Ben Sasse more repellent because he's not the like disgusting creep outwardly that Ted Cruz is. But Ben Sasse, like, you know, believes all the same things Ted Cruz does. But he can't help but sell himself as America's concerned father.
Yeah, he's one of the last people who actually does think that the forms matter, that the appearances have to be upheld, because he is explicitly speaking, as he says in that article, to this very thin strata of economic and political elites who actually are paying attention to this shit and haven't just checked out because it's stimulus overload.
So again, I just want to close this out by saying, you know, as you know, Mitch McConnell gets hassled at, you know, at the Cracker Barrel or wherever the fuck he eats his gruel.
The hot flat rock in the pond that he likes to sit on.
And, you know, and as people continue to express their very justified anger over things like Brett Kavanaugh and the Trump administration and begin to, you know, organized to do that in a way that does constitute shared and meaningful work to engage in politics and to try to fight back against these people who you are absolutely justified in hating. Don't be fucking fooled by that. It's okay to hate these people. It's okay. Keep that hate close to you. Keep it pure like a diamond, like Alexander Coburn said.
Yeah.
Is your hate pure, Eddie? Keep your hate pure for people like Ben Sasse, because they're going to keep trying this shit and they're going to keep trying to say that, like, oh, it's all in your head and you caring about this is what's making you sick and depressed.
Yeah. He's like the doctor in Rosemary's Baby.
And being angry about this is a sign that you're not sick and depressed, or at the very least, you're not sick and depressed enough to just completely check out.
Yeah.
Because that's what will happen if it really gets bad, is that you'll fucking give up.
Yeah.
So don't do that, and don't fucking listen to Ben Sasse. Fucking spit on him in public. Ruin every one of his meals and charity fucking baseball games.
Yeah, he hasn't been harassed nearly enough. this guy. I haven't heard any viral things about Ben Sasse getting owned. I think partially because he's got that incredibly bland, like, serial killer face. I couldn't probably pick him out of a lineup.
Well, and he lives in, like, Fremont or some shit.
That's it for us this week. And we don't even have anything
nothing to plug.
Nothing
holy
to
shit.
Plug at all.
Wow.
Yeah. But on a closing note, thank you again so much to everyone we saw and got to meet and hang out with in the Midwest. You guys were truly, truly the real heroes and a joy at every single city we went to.
Absolutely. Nothing but diamonds all across this great country.
Till next time, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.